Picture a world where costs are down, profits are up, and customers are clamoring at your door. You're listening to Let's Get Up to Business from Jordan Law. Our interviews with business owners, service providers, and area experts can teach you how to create a world of success and profitability. If you're looking for an attorney to assist in your business formation, employment agreements, or other legal business needs, contact Jordan Law at 407-906-5529. You can also reach us on the web at jordanlawfl.com. Jordan Law, we protect you and your business.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jordan Ostroff from Jordan Law, and joining me today is Stuart Lundeen, a phenomenal guest. Today, we're going to be talking about the PPP loans, specifically the forgiveness, as it comes up to the end of the year. As you know, this is Let's Get Up to Business, our Facebook live show turned podcast, where we talk with business owners, business service providers, and other experts in their fields to help drive the best information possible to help you grow and protect your business. Thank you so much for joining us today, Stuart.
Absolutely, Jordan. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
And my bad. I always forget this part. So for those of you that don't know, I have to follow the show on my iPad or my phone so that I can see comments while we're going here. And I always forget to turn the volume off. So anyway, for those of you that are commenting, go ahead. You will be about 15 seconds behind our feed. But if you have questions for Stuart, get them in and we'll make sure we ask them. So before we get into the nitty gritty here, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I was born and raised in Miami. I moved up to Orlando in 2016. I am currently a CPA and I've been practicing with MBAF or Morrison Brown or Giesen Farah since 2013 and now oversee our audit department in our Orlando office.
So what does a CPA do?
So there's different aects of CPAs. There's obviously your tax CPAs as well as your audit and accounting CPAs. So in my field, I specialize in audits, and we are required to perform financial statement audits for companies due to various factors such as having loans out with financial institutions. They might be looking to sell their business in the next couple of years, so they like to have audited financial statements in order to provide any potential buyers with audited financial statements. That just provides them a little bit more comfort in the numbers that they're representing. The seller, that is, that are accurate and not materially misstated.
And aren't there some extra requirements that come with taking certain loans where they'd have to be properly audited or they can't do disbursements?
That all depends on the fin- Yeah, that all depends on the financial institution and the size of the loan. So certain financial institutions, maybe up to, you know, $500,000 might require a review. And the difference between an audit, a review, and a compilation is a compilation is we are just taking management's financial statements and preparing them in a financial statement format. Your balance sheet, statement of operations, statement of members' equity or changes in stockholders' equity, as well as a statement of cash flows. A review is more analytical procedures and inquiry of management. So we do a bunch of ratios, compare year over year, just inquire management as to any changes from prior year. And then an audit involves actual substantive procedures where we actually pull invoices for either revenues or expenses, look at copies of checks, do substantive procedures around their cash reconciliation, accounts receivable, make sure that, you know, their allowance for any accounts receivable is accurate based on the current conditions of those customers.
So it sounds like the audit would be the most in-depth one.
Absolutely, yes. And that provides the most reliance. In a compilation, you're not providing any reliance or that there's material misstatements. A review, there's a conclusion. But again, it's based off of analytical procedures and inquiry of management. Where an audit, we're actually opining on the financial statements.
So gotcha.
An opinion.
All right. So when we're talking about the PPP loans, what are we talking about here?
So the PPP loans, as you all may be aware, has been an ever-changing, unprecedented times. So when the CARES Act first came out, there were certain stipulations, and those have changed over time. So part of the CARES Act was these PPP loans, or the Paycheck Protection Program loans. And these loans were issued by the federal government through various financial institutions that participated in the program. And companies were able to apply for these loans. And when they received the money, they had to use the funds in order to pretty much maintain their business. And there's certain qualifying expenses that can be allowed to be used, at which point once the debt becomes due, they apply for forgiveness through their lender, and then the lender then goes to the SBA who has final approval. At that point, as long as their funds have been used for these qualifying expenses, the loan can and most likely will be forgiven.
And so correct me if I'm wrong, you know, Paycheck Protection Program. So the goal behind this was to keep people's jobs. Is that right?
Absolutely. We can get into it later, but the forgiveness, you have to spend up to 60 or at least 60% of these funds on payroll protection. And again, keeping employees employed and not having to furlough any workers due to the pandemic.
And you have to have what, the same number of full-time employees at the end as you did at the beginning?
Correct. So there's different stipulations. What they call is the full-time FTE or the full-time equivalent. So as long as an employee was employed by the company as of February 15th, that would be a counted employee to where they could use those funds for payroll expenses. Anything thereafter is really kind of, you're getting into that gray area of when the pandemic started and the loans were issued. So they're trying to prevent anybody from kind of manipulating the use of the funds is why they set that date.
And so originally we were talking about what, it was an 8-week window that was covered?
Correct. It was originally an 8-week period to use the funds, and then a 2-year maturity date. And that was if you received your funds from the SBA prior to June 5th. If you received your funds after June 5th, that default period was then 24 weeks and a 5-year maturity. Now, anybody who did receive their funds prior to June 15th may elect to have their 8-week period turned into a 24-week period. There's just some, you know, some basic paperwork that you have to file with the SBA to make that election.
Is there any benefit to the 8-week period versus the 24-week period?
In my eyes, no, because you're limiting yourself on the amount of allowable expenses that you may incur during that time period that will allow the loan to be forgiven. So if you're looking at payroll, you know, you only have that 8-week period that you use those funds, whereas over the 24-week period, more of those funds could be used for payroll and therefore meet that percentage of the amount that can be forgiven.
So then, I mean, I guess I'm seeing a way, though, where if you, you know, because I think we all thought this pandemic would be the worst in maybe June or July, and really it may have been the worst in September, October. So there may be some business out there that was able to keep employees for 8 weeks but wasn't for 24 weeks. Would that be a situation where there might be a benefit?
Yes and no, because part of the full-time equivalency is there's different parameters that you have to meet. So if you were to furlough an employee and then you know, took your reasonable measures to onboard them back in after being furloughed, then, you know, you can count them towards a full-time exemption. Now there's different aspects of it. Whereas if an employee got, you know, fired for cause, well, that's not that you didn't try to go back and hire them and employ them back again. You had a reason for letting them go, so therefore they wouldn't qualify.
Gotcha. So what's the, I mean, obviously, other than the benefit of keeping the job open or keeping the job funded by the government, is there any specific benefits to employees through the payroll protection program, or it's really just mostly money to employers to keep employees?
Correct. It's money to employers to keep employees, and they can also be used for other non-payroll costs such as mortgage interest, rent, those type of things. But then you get into various factors. Is that rent, was that lease agreement signed prior to February 15th? If it was, then that would be allowable. And then you have to get into this related party. If you sublease your space where, you know, hypothetically say your monthly rent is $10,000, but you sublease a portion of your space to another tenant for $2,500. So really at the end of the day, your net expense is $7,500. That would be the only allowable deduction that you could use in applying for the forgiveness. You couldn't use the full $10,000. You could only use $7,500. Same thing with mortgage interest. If you are the owner of the building, you can, that mortgage interest is an allowable deduction to be applied for forgiveness. But if you rent out a space of your whole building, then only the percentage of the fair market value of the space that you actually use can be allocated to the interest expense that can be forgiven.
So I know this came up a bunch, and I know I have my legal answer. Maybe you have some insight from the accounting side. So I saw a lot of people that were like, oh, you know, employee came to lawyer and says, hey, my employer got the PPP loan. They're totally not going to use it for the right stuff. You know, do I have any recourse? And from a legal standpoint, I mean, my answer is no, because it doesn't, there's no thing that you have to use it that way. It's just if you want forgiveness. Is that correct?
Correct. Absolutely. The employer can only apply for forgiveness for certain expenses incurred. If they lay off an employee and they don't use those funds for those qualified expenses, then they can't apply. When they go to apply for forgiveness, those amounts will obviously not be included. So they might have had $1 million loan, but only be forgiven, you know, maybe $200,000. So at that point, the rest of the principal will be their liability that they will have to repay.
So in theory, an employer could just take that loan, not put any of it towards it, and be fine. Well, I guess fine may not be the right word, but be legally okay. They would just have to pay back the full value of the loan plus interest.
Correct. And I guess if you look at it from that point of view, it's much cheaper for the employer to do that, given the interest rate on these loans is much lower than your typical loans from financial institutions.
What are we looking at? The interest rate on these loans was what, 1%?
Correct. Correct.
Which, I mean, I don't know where you'd be able to borrow money for less than that. You can get a you used to be able to get that on a CD, which we're not at that point yet, but
right. I'm not sure you can you know, get a better interest rate with that. And that kind of leads me into my next point, is dealing with the accounting for these loans. You are supposed to accrue the interest on the full amount up until the point the approval for the forgiveness has been approved by the SBA. So we recommend our clients to file for forgiveness within 10 months after the maturity date of their loan. And then I believe the lender, you provide all your forgiveness application supporting documents such as payroll reports, any utility bills, mortgage interest statements to your lender who you actually received the funds. And they have, I believe, 30 or 60 days to review that. They kind of put together a packet, at which point it's sent to the SBA. The SBA, therefore, has 90 days after receiving the packet from the lender to approve or disapprove the forgiveness, at which time they will then, if it's approved, they send the money to the financial institution who was the main lender, and then it's forgiven at that point. But for financial statement purposes, you have to accrue the interest up until it's forgiven. So given the kind of time period we're in, we're seeing most of our clients as of December 31st either haven't applied for the forgiveness or the forgiveness hasn't been approved by the SBA. So they have to accrue that interest up until December 31st that they were to incur. The following year, if they were to receive the forgiveness, then that, you know, we would reverse that accrual of the interest into 2021 as a reduction of interest expense.
So it sounds like if you don't get approved for the if you don't get approved quickly enough for the forgiveness, there are like potential tax benefits for your 2020 taxes. You would then, I mean, it would get figured out in 2021, but at least short term, you may have some benefits to business owners there too.
Absolutely. And that, you know, with the election now concluded, we have reviewed and looked at the forgiveness under both kind of what the Trump tax plan is and then what Biden's tax plan is, or his, you know, what he would like it to see. And for the, under the Trump tax plan, it's really just a timing issue of when you're going to have to pay that those taxes. If you look at it over year one to year two on the combined amount, you're still going to get to the same amount. Under Biden's proposed tax plan, there would be more tax implications to business owners for this forgiveness.
All right. We have two really good questions from Zach Bridenbach. The first one is, are PPP loans personally guaranteed generally?
No.
Okay, so not personally guaranteed. And also, there was something that, like, there's really no recourse on the loans, right?
They are secured loans. I'm not exactly sure what the federal government
okay.
as far as repercussions towards anybody who fails to pay them back. But most clients, they took out this money knowing that, hey, we can use this money to cover our payroll expenses and various other non-payroll costs. So a lot of business owners are very stringent and keeping track of how they spent that money, whether it be opening up a separate bank account or vice versa. So they're able to track those funds because obviously at the end of the day, all business owners want to, you know, hope to get 100% forgiven at that point.
So the follow-up question there was, you apply for forgiveness when? After the 8 or 24 week period or at the maturity date? I know you talked about it from the standpoint of applying within 10 months, but is that something like, as the loan holder business owner, do you need to wait for your bank, for your lender to be asking for it? Can you apply directly to the SBA? You know, are you forced into one place?
No, you have to apply for forgiveness through the lender that you receive the funds from.
Okay.
At which point you have to provide all, you know, your supporting documentation on how you calculated the various payroll costs that would be forgiven, or mortgage interest rates, getting a monthly statement, those type of things. And then you provide that package to your financial institution. They then review it, put it together in a form that the SBA has approved and how they want it to kind of see shown, and then they send it to the SBA. The SBA has final say on the approval.
So from the standpoint of you as the business owner applying at a specific time, really you need your lender to be taking that application.
Correct. And the application portal for the SBA did open in August 10th, I believe it opened. But they are now receiving applications and have started providing forgiveness approvals.
Is that something where they were looking at the larger institutions or the larger loans first? Excuse me, or was there any priority given anybody?
No priority to my understanding.
Okay.
Due to the size of the loan. We would recommend not waiting to the maturity date and to do it as soon as possible because of the supporting documentation that you have to provide, right? So some payroll reports, those mortgage statements. So if you wait until the maturity date, it might be a lot more difficult to provide that documentation and to gather it. So we recommend kind of once you've covered that 8 or 24 week period, whichever you elect, that you start the process and start filing the application with your lender.
And for this, we're just talking about the PPP loan. We're not talking about the EIDL. We're not talking about any other disaster loans.
Correct.
We're just talking about that one.
Just the PPP loan.
So from your perspective, I mean, you're sitting in a pretty good spot because you're running these audits for other companies, and obviously you're seeing a lot of y'all's clients coming through the accounting firm. What overall advice do you have for, you know, the mom and pop business owner when it comes to this PPP stuff? Just, you know, keep your stuff in order. I mean, is there more that they can be doing? How proactive can they be with this?
There, it depends on the size of the company, because as you know, there is that the threshold that the annualized payroll of somebody cannot exceed $100,000. So you are able to pay any back commissions, bonuses, those type of things that they will be considered, but you have to consider that annualized salary cannot exceed $100,000. That once it's capped at $100,000. So there's some planning there. We would just recommend, as you use the funds, have very good supporting documentation behind it. Make sure you have the payroll reports instead of trying to gather them all at the end. As you use those funds, and you know, some of our clients do have segregated bank accounts, able to track those, and it's going to make your application process a lot more seamless and not so tiresome, because as we all know, as business owners, they're in the process of this unprecedented pandemic, and they're trying to see how they can get their revenues back up, how they can cut these expenses. So they're focusing on more of the company, and they don't really want to be focusing and having to spend too much time on these applications. So we recommend doing it as soon as possible.
I just have to imagine, though, like if you took these loans and used them for the purpose they were geared for, excuse me, with 24 weeks, like companies have had to totally blow past what the coverage amount is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, they've used more than the funds that they've received. And one of the things we do recommend to our clients is, although you only received $1 million loan and maybe you used $2 million in salary during that 24-week period, we would recommend submitting additional documentation for that $2 million. So in the event they try to, you know, line out any expenses that you thought might fall under forgiveness, well, now you can kind of fall back on other expenses. So we recommend applying with additional documentation above your loan amount, just, you know, for sake of worst case scenario.
I mean, and for a lot of it, like, I mean, I can just pull my paycheck pay stubs and just, some, I mean, and run that stuff. That'll have, you know, you can start those in any specific year or any specific date.
Correct. Correct. But, you know, the mortgage statements are the ones that might be harder to get, or your rent payments, lease payments, those type of things. So one thing I would like to bring up is that any debt that is unsecured, that interest is not forgivable. So, you know, a mortgage, for instance, that interest is secured by the property. So that interest is forgivable. Now, if you have a regular operating lease on a copier, a vehicle, it's not secured, well, then the interest associated with that would not be forgivable.
Gotcha. Makes sense. I know they were talking about, I think originally it had been $150,000, and then I think they lowered it to $50,000 for that kind of express lane, easier forgiveness. Is that something that ended up going through?
Correct. So there are three loan applications that you need to file. There's a 3508S, a 3508EZ, and then the other one is the 3508. So for the 3508S, there were floating around the consideration that anything loan less than $50,000 would have an automatic forgiveness. That has not been signed into law. So anybody who had a PPP loan less than $50,000 would need to file their forgiveness application. 508S.
Okay. So that did not go all the way.
That did not go all the way. It's still being, like I said, tossed around in Washington, but it's nothing that's final or signed in.
And have y'all heard any rumblings with the election results sort of coming in that there would be a push to extend some of this, do another round of some of these loans? I mean, anything along those lines?
Not really. We all see that. I think that Heroes Act is that the Democrats are trying to push through as another stimulus one. I think it all depends on, you know, the parties coming together and working together to get something approved and signed into law.
Which that would be the most amazing end of 2020, right? Like if we could get right, some bipartisan.
We need some bipartisan, you know, camaraderie between everybody to get something passed. They still seem to be kind of standing firm on their ground on what they think is reasonable.
So then any other insight, wisdom, tips, tricks, guidance that you want to share with our business owner listeners here?
So we would recommend any business owners to kind of go ahead and do a going concern analysis. For audits, that's something we need to consider, providing audited financial statements. And that going concern is from the date of the financials. Now, if your audit is for a year in December 31st, 2020, that's not the date of the financials, it's the date of the report. So if it's not issued until March 31st, 2021, we have to consider from March 31st, 2021 to March 30th, 2022, is the business going to be able to continue as a going concern? Audit requirement that we have to do, that now a new standard is requiring management to perform as well. So those type of analysis consider, you know, take into account any expenses. Are you able to reduce some of your discretionary expenses? How are your sales going to get put back up? Again, one of the hardest hit industries was the hospitality industry. So all of our hotel clients, unfortunately, due to this unprecedented times, they don't have any historical data to rely on to say, okay, during this pandemic 5 years ago, this is how we, you know, got out of it and we're still here today. So that's one thing we do recommend, is to take a look at your financial position and do that going concern analysis. It only provides you comfort in saying, as a business owner, what do I need to focus on if my cash is going to run out in 6 months and you don't want to make any additional capital contributions? How can I focus on my company being here today in 2021?
So we've all decided to pivot into making hand sanitizer and N95 masks to make sure that we can keep going for the next year. Do you, and this may be outside of your purview also, but with Florida also passing the increase in the minimum wage, do you see that playing any role for a lot of businesses when it comes to this, you know, not only overcoming COVID, but also especially the hospitality industry, talking about a lot of people getting a, you know, 20% pay jump from minimum wage up to $10 and how that'll impact the bottom line? Or is that not something we've talked about?
That's something that I, you know, just got signed in or approved during 2 weeks ago. So we really haven't gone, you know, across that. But, you know, just from a very high perspective, we would see that having an effect on smaller companies. You know, if just hypothetically speaking, if you have 10 employees and their minimum wage is, you know, $10 an hour, you're looking at, you know, whatever it is, $100 an hour for that employee. But now, for per hour, now you have those same 10 employees and now it's 15. Now you've pretty much increased your payroll expense per hour by 50%. That's a huge hit on people's bottom line. And that's just per hour, right? When you look at it on an annualized basis, that could be a very detrimental to, you know, a company staying alive or being able to keep employees hired. So now there might be having to result in cutting their workforce from 10 people to 8 people to kind of take into account those additional payroll expenses that they're going to have to incur.
Yeah, it makes total sense. All right. So as we get to the end here, I mean, I want to make sure we don't leave any stone unturned, because obviously you've got so much expertise in this that you know way more than me. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that we need to make sure we talk about?
Just a few things that I just kind of want to bring up, maybe some key points.
Sure.
For your payroll cost that can be forgiven, if your payroll period is, your covered period starts on the day you receive your funds. So if your payroll period might not coincide with the day you received your funds, you can elect an alternative covered period. So hypothetically, you received your funds on May 1st, 2020, but your next payroll cycle does not start until May 5th, 2020. That alternate covered period, you can start it on May 5th, 2020, and then do the 8 or 24 week period. But that only applies to payroll costs. You don't have an alternative covered period for any of these non-payroll costs that we spoke about. Payroll costs should be used at the gross amount to calculate your forgiveness. And as I mentioned before, you may include any payment of lost tips, commissions, or bonus in the calculation of those payroll costs that were back paid. And again, just to reemphasize that the limit is $100,000. Realized payroll cost.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Other than that, we just recommend doing the application as soon as possible while you have the documentation, and go ahead and accrue any interest. If you haven't received any word from the SBA, make sure that interest is accrued as a year end. And we we have a kind of a very well-built tracker that can help, you know, any of your clients or any of your listeners to calculate these payroll costs. So if you guys have any questions or kind of want to help us help you through this situation, please reach out to me. We'd be happy to help in any way we can.
Perfect. So how do we get people access to you and access to the payroll calculator?
So our firm website is mbafcpa.com. You can reach me at slundeen, that's S-L-U-N-D-E-E-N, at mbafcpa.com. Just put in the subject line, you know, that you're inquiring about our PPP services, and then we'll kind of go through and walk through and kind of look at your business overall and the size of the loan and the different factors that need to be considered into it, and we can help you there.
All right, perfect. Mark, I can see the top like third of your screen. Did you get that information? Thumbs up, perfect. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Absolutely, Jordan. Thank you for having me, and I hope you all have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
You've been listening to Let's Get Up to Business from Jordan Law. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast and would consider sharing the show. We would also love an honest 5-star review through iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or whatever podcatcher you use. If you are interested in being a guest of the podcast, please contact producer Mark through email at mark@jordanlawfl.com. Use the subject line podcast guest in your email. Thank you. We look forward to speaking to you again soon.